It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, in for Tanzina Vega. And I'm working kind of hard right now to keep the panic out of my voice. News from around the country and the world this week has me alarmed. Take a listen to just some of it.
At least 1,300 missing, at least 100 killed.
Count yourself lucky if you can get out of here alive. You compare it to Hurricane Katrina, I mean, everybody here has lost everything.
Devastating flooding across Western Germany, the Netherlands, and Belgium.
Record-breaking rainfall has caused severe flooding in parts of central China. More than 200,000 people in Hunan province have been evacuated, while it's reported a dam could collapse at any time.
Now, this fire has burned more than 30,000 acres in Plumas and Butte counties, growing twice as big overnight. Containment now at 15%. As we mentioned, evacuation orders are growing.
The sudden smoky scene that really overtook the tri-state area due to the western wildfires. More of a concern because of the deteriorating air quality. Instead of those fine particles remaining aloft and they can travel thousands of miles, some of that was mixed down to the surface.
The smell hits you first, then the sight.
I've never seen anything that brings me to tears out in nature, out in the bay. This is definitely it.
Red tide continues its grips on the Tampa Bay area.
Next month, for the first time in the modern history of the Colorado River, a water shortage is going to be declared at Lake Mead. There's a 120-foot high white band encircling the entire lake that it demarcates where the water level has dropped in recent years. Climate change is here.
Climate crisis is here, everywhere, right now, and all across the world in our own literal backyards. We are living with the consequences of this crisis every day. Okay, no, stop. This is not about sounding the alarm for the future. This is a more quiet, sober conversation, folks. This is about how we adapt to the already changing planet on which we are living, and how we try to mitigate the havoc we continue to wreak on our Earth. Here to talk more about climate adaptation is Brody Bolin, a partner at McKinsey Sustainability and co-author of the report Focused Adaptation, a Strategic Approach to Climate Adaptation in Cities. Brody, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate it.
And also with us is Mayor Savanti Myrick of Ithaca, New York. Mayor Myrick was instrumental in the creation of what has been called Ithaca's Green New Deal. Mayor Myrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Good to talk with you again.
It's lovely to talk with you again. Brody, let's start with the report itself. Help us understand, what is climate adaptation?
Yeah, so climate adaptation is about being prepared for all of the things that climate change is going to throw our way. You know, we heard in the intro a number of examples, whether it be extreme heat, flooding, storm surges, rising sea levels, drought, wildfires. All of these things are going to be increasing in both the frequency with which they happen and, you know, unfortunately, the severity of each of those events. And so adaptation is about making sure our cities, our communities are prepared to prevent them where possible, and when they do happen, to, you know, respond and bounce back.
Brody, give me one more beat on why cities and the ways in which cities are particularly both vulnerable to the climate crisis that we are currently already in, and why they may hold the best solutions.
Yeah, so cities are vulnerable because often they're built in places that kind of make them vulnerable, right? So they're built by the ocean or by rivers because those are former trade routes. And, you know, those types of things can expose them to things like increased flooding. Also, just, you know, layering a bunch of land with concrete doesn't do great things for things like heat and flooding. It makes it harder for the water to seep into the ground. It makes it harder for heat to be dissipated. So sometimes the way we build our cities actually exacerbates some of these risks. But I think the upside is you have a whole bunch of people in one place, and you can protect a lot of people and a lot of infrastructure more efficiently. And so I think, you know, cities are also in a lot of ways our greatest hope for adapting, because we're able to, you know, invest in adapting, and that has an immediate benefit to a significant chunk of our population.
Mayor Myrick, let me come to you, because you are living this, governing this right now in your city in Ithaca. Talk to me about what you're seeing there in terms of how climate crisis is impacting your city and residents.
Absolutely. This happens to be my 10th year as mayor. And each year has been hotter than the last. And I was speaking with my park staff about some recent storms that knocked down some majestic 50-year-old willow trees in Stewart Park. And we were mourning the loss of these trees and also the increased frequency of these storms when I mentioned that yes, this is the 10th year in a row that is hotter than the year before. And one of the staff said, well, we need to prepare for the likelihood that this is actually going to be the coldest year of the rest of your life. Mm. A stunning thing to think about and a concerning one, especially for a city like Ithaca, one of the youngest in the country. Our median age is about 24 years old, which means that the median Ithacan by 2050, that really important date that's supposedly far in the future for climate change, the median Ithacan is going to be what? It's going to be 51 years old. It is going to be figuring out how to raise their children and grandchildren in a climate that's increasingly unpredictable. And what it's meant for us, we're here in the beautiful Finger Lakes, as resilient a place as you could actually find, with our long, deep lakes, our valleys. We're far from the ocean. We're pretty resistant to storms. And yet still, we're seeing increased flooding. We're seeing once every 100 year, supposedly once every 100 year storms, every 2 or 3 years. We're seeing flood insurance go through the roof. And we're seeing a change in our agriculture, something that for the last two decades actually was benefiting us. Our wines kept getting better and better. People kept coming to the Finger Lakes region, comparing it to Napa Valley and saying, geez, these wines are catching up. I wonder why. Is it the brilliance of the farmers? Well, yes, in part. But also it's been that slowly our weather and our growing season has been getting longer and longer. Now, that is not going to benefit us forever. And that's going to disrupt a lot of people's livelihoods. So the resilience, as Brian mentioned, is extremely important for cities.
So Brody, let's come to your report again. It emphasizes the way that local leaders like Mayor Myrick need to adapt to climate issues like those he was just laying out right now. And a lot of it has to do with urban planning, with built environment. Can you talk about what some of those recommendations are?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's each city is going to have to, do what makes sense for it, right? And I think the attempt of this report was to provide some of those things that cities can do, or that most cities can do, that may have the biggest impact for the biggest bang for the buck. And so a lot of that, comes down to how you plan and how you build cities. So it's things like making sure you're building in the right places, making sure you're not building in ways that actually increases the exposure of the city to some of these hazards. A lot of nature-based solutions have a real significant impact on adaptation while having a bunch of other positive side effects. So things like planting trees on the street level, green roofs, having natural river systems that allow water to be absorbed into the soil and directed through natural kind of winding waterways, coastal-based storm surge protection like mangroves. And I think that the great thing about a lot of those types of actions is that not only does it cool the street level, allow floods to dissipate, but it also makes cities more beautiful, more enjoyable, more livable, and more sustainable. And so you're able to hit multiple targets with some of these actions.
So, Mayor, let me come to you on this, because I can hear in my head, I can hear my urban planning professorial dad who raised me saying, yeah, that all sounds lovely, but cities that are more sustainable and beautiful and all of that, they're also more expensive to live in. And also, you're talking about climate crisis, that's something in the future. What about what underserved communities, what impoverished communities, and what racialized communities need right now? So how do you as a mayor balance those questions of green and black, green and brown, green and the green that is about poverty and inequality?
Yeah, such a good and important question. I think it's important to recognize that what Brody is describing can and should actually benefit traditionally marginalized populations. So building infill in the center of cities instead of allowing continued suburban and exurban sprawl is actually an opportunity to rebuild tax base in cities that have been left behind, and importantly, to increase tax investment in those communities as well. So it's possible that by reversing the last 50 years of American development patterns, you can also begin to reverse the last 50 years of disinvestment in inner cities in America. So by building in our cores and stopping the sprawl, you can actually do good things, but it is important to go beyond it. You know, and I think the Green New Deal, our Green New Deal, really stresses the New Deal, not just the green part. You know, the New Deal was important because it gave American families opportunities at a middle-class lifestyle that was previously unattainable. We can make a just transition, and that's what we set out to do in Ithaca by proclaiming that by 2030, we want to be the first American city to be completely carbon neutral. And we want to do that by electrifying all of our buildings and by moving as many of our vehicles as we can to electric and then sourcing that electricity from renewable sources. Now, to do that is a huge lift, will require quite a lot of capital, but will require thousands and thousands of workers, people that should be paid living wages and above. And by doing that, and look, and I think that we've got to be more creative with how we finance this, because that's just as important. For 10 seconds on our stormwater. You know, you mentioned the rain falling on impervious surfaces. 5 years ago, we created a new fee that actually charged property owners for the amount of rain that falls on their property and goes uncollected. And believe me when I tell you, there were a lot of homeowners that were like, "You're charging me for the rain now?"
Yeah, I was like, that's a tough one, Mayor.
I know. But think about it this way. Not only does that incentivize people to create catch basins, to use impervious surfaces, to add green roofs to their buildings, but this fee charges the largest property owners. I'm talking not now just about the people with big houses. I'm talking about Walmart. Mm-hmm. That's using enormous parking lots that are never actually full. I'm talking about the Wegmans and the Targets of the world. I'm talking about the Cornell universities of the world. The folks who have the most money and the most land actually pay way, way more into this fee, which then gets redistributed back into resilient infrastructure that benefits those who have the least. So by using progressive taxation and progressive fees, we can create this resilient infrastructure to benefit the communities that were otherwise left behind.
Brody, literally yesterday, as we're kind of preparing, you know, for this conversation, I open up the New York Times and see a story about a city in Utah that has had to pull the plug on growth altogether. No more building because of the nature of the drought. What happens when we're looking at heat waves and drought like that all across the Western U.S.? And, you know, it's so bad that they're having to stop any kind of construction, much less engage in the kind of interesting, new, innovative green construction that we're talking about right now.
Yeah. So, you know, that sounds like quite an extreme example indeed. I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities for at least most cities to take these adaptation steps in ways, as the mayor mentioned, that have multiple spillover benefits, right? So that improve livability, that increase economic development, that address some of the equity issues that you raised. A lot of these hazards actually affect those with less economic resources the most, right? And so doing things, taking steps that prevent flooding in you know, extreme heat can actually address some of those inequities. So I hope that most of our cities are able to continue to at least grow and develop in ways that improve livability as well as adaptation.
I'm wondering, Brody, if the tax base of cities is sufficient to do this, and you just heard Mayor Myrick talk a bit about, you know, creative ways to address, for example, the property taxes and local taxation, but is it necessary for the federal government to invest in cities where most Americans live in order to make these changes really possible?
Yeah. So I think, well, first of all, I think many of these actions and the ones that we're, you know, kind of raising in the work that we did are not the most expensive actions, right? Which is why they're beneficial. Things like planting trees, greening roofs, enabling just natural systems to deal with some of these risks, are actually not as expensive as having to build a seawall or relocate huge tracts of land. So I think that's one, is trying to do it in a way that's as cost effective as possible. And yeah, I think there are going to be roles for multiple levels of government to play here, right? In countries all over the world, you're going to have cities take actions that are within their purview based on the resources they have, and you're going to have help from, in places like the U.S., the federal government, and places in other places of the world, whether it be their national governments, development banks, and so on. But I think this is a bit of an all hands on deck scenario. And we're going to need all levels of government and all parts of our kind of institutional landscape to help address the issue.
So, Mayor Mark, that language of all hands on deck, I have to say, as the team was making a decision about having an all climate change and climate crisis show today, like, this little part of me got really nervous, because I remember from back in the bad old days when I was on cable news, nothing made people turn off TV more swiftly than telling them that you were going to talk about climate change. And I wonder how you get the necessary collaborative enthusiasm and support from citizens, from local residents, from people who hear words like impervious surfaces and are like, I'm out, I'm done, I can't do this. How do we get people excited to do this work?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It's I actually think keeping the focus local really helps, because people don't want to talk about climate change, but they do want to talk about the creek next to their house. And they don't want to worry, as we've learned, about polar bears so much as they worry about whether their basement's going to flood and whether their crops are going to come in. And that's why I actually think it's not a coincidence that mayors and cities have led on this issue, that it was the Paris Accords, right, and not called the France Accords, that, mayors have, especially around climate change, but on a lot of issues, we have almost too much responsibility and too little power, while the federal government has too much power and far too little responsibility. I think if we were to make Congress, if we were to hold Congress as accountable as we hold our local elected officials, if we were to tell them, we expect you to take care of the creek next to our house, we would see far better action. Because importantly, and I think, Melissa, this gets to the heart of your question, how do we actually make this change? How do we stop digging ourselves deeper into this hole and invest in the kind of resiliency that Brody is calling for? You need a more progressive taxation than local governments are able to pull off, because we have just fewer tools. We're not able to tax income in the same way, or wealth in the same way, that the federal government could. We've got to start holding our congressmen and women and senators responsible for what's happening in our local jurisdictions.
Mayor, do you think that the age, I've been sort of pondering your point about Ithaca being a median age young city. I'm wondering, do you think young people are just, and young leaders are just going to do better on this topic?
I do. I think the for us growing up, it was not a debate. It was not controversial. I debated quite often growing up in a very conservative school district. Every social and economic issue you could imagine under the sun. But even the president of the local Republicans in my high school knew that climate change was just a fact, that this was the science and this was a reality. And I think the younger generation's a bit more clear-eyed about the problem and a bit more committed to, let me put it this way. We understand that we're in a hole. We understand that this is already happening. It's not hypothetical. But we also understand that the first thing you do when you're in a hole is you stop digging. And I believe that the next generation of leaders, as I've seen from Mayor Brandon Scott in Baltimore to Ilhan Omar out in Minneapolis, is attacking these issues with a fierce urgency that does give me hope.
Mayor Svante Myrick is the mayor of Ithaca, New York, and worth noting, was the youngest person ever elected mayor when he was elected a full 10 years ago. Brody Boland is a partner at McKinsey Sustainability and one of the authors of the report you should go read right now, Focused Adaptation, A Strategic Approach to Climate Adaptation in Cities. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.